Like many of us, writer Bill Barish had an image of the perfect Irish pub, a smiling barman, witty conversation, turf in the fireplace, a comfortable, unpretentious place. It had to be real. He'd seen it in the movies. Then he moved to Dublin and started a search, first in his neighborhood across the city and the countryside, to learn that the traditional Irish pub of his imagination is now a product of corporate marketeers who establish reproductions of Irish pubs in airports and hotels around the world at just about the same rate as the real thing is vanishing. So what is it that makes a great pub? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Bill Barish joins us now from the studios of NPR West. His new book is A Pint of Plain, Tradition, Change, and the Fate of the Irish Pub. Thanks so much for coming in.
Well, you're quite welcome, Neil.
And from your description, there are some things that a pub has to have to be terrific and some things it should definitely not have.
Well, you know, I think the kind of romantic image I had, it still obtains in many ways, and there are they're getting to be a bit like needles in the haystack, but if you look hard enough, you find that quintessential Irish pub here and there, and there are certain things that it requires to meet that standard, which is to say, you should not be confronted by a bevy of flat-screen TVs showing rugby, soccer, American Idol even. You should not have piped-in music. You should not have barmen and barwomen who don't know how to pour a proper pint. It should be a place that feels like an extension of home, and not quite work and not quite home, a third place, as a certain sociologist has put it, that encourages friendships that would not occur under normal circumstances. A good pub is a real democracy, where you walk in and you'll find a banker talking to a plumber about horse racing, or you know, a politician talking to a farmer about local issues. So all of those things go into constituting a really first-rate pub.
And there is a quality that you refer to in the book, and it's not your word; it's an Irish word, crack.
Crack indeed, yeah, spelled C-R-A-I-C, which is a funny sort of story. It's a totally made-up word. The media created it so that there'd be no confusion with crack cocaine. C-R-A-C-K is the way it's said. And it applies to the kind of fun, particularly the kind of fun that can be had in pubs, and it involves conversation, drink, and sometimes music.
And music that does not come necessarily from a playlist.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Made by actual human beings. you know, if you run into a good pub where a session is going on, it absolutely is magic. And crack tends to, if you go to a small town, there's always an overabundance of pubs. There'll be, you know, 10 in a village of 300 or 400 people. And the crack moves by random and by mysterious ways from one to the other. And you'll notice that people will begin to gravitate toward that spot. One sociologist called it, almost like a performance art. It's improvised, it begins, and then it ends without any signal from anybody. It just occurs.
It just occurs. I just wonder these days if people are getting text messages saying, the crack's on at Shannon's tonight.
I'm sure they are, absolutely.
would that be one of the qualities of a good pub, that maybe cell phones have to be turned off?
Well, you know, people are very polite still in Ireland, and you find that in pubs. You know, if you come in and you order a pint and you go sit at a table, the barman or the barwoman will bring you the pint. They'll find you no matter where you are in the pub. And in a good pub, anybody who's using a cell phone will immediately step outside if they get a call, so as not to disturb. You won't find that horrible thing that you find, may I say, here in America, you know, where someone is in the seat next to you on the plane you know, talking, you know, about Aunt Molly and her problems, you know. You just don't get that.
As people can probably tell from your accent, you're not originally from Ireland. You moved there fairly recently.
I did, yes. No, I was on holiday in London, and I met a woman from Dublin, and basically I followed her home and had the good luck for everything to work out. So I've been there for a while now.
And as you, here's an email, by the way, we got from Stan in Jacksonville, Florida. What makes a good Irish pub? He rhetorically asks himself, good crack. So there you have it. as you started this search for, you thought it'd be pretty easy. I mean, there's so many pubs in Dublin that finding a good local wouldn't be that hard.
Well, yeah, I think roughly 12,000 in the entire country. And in my neighborhood, which is really very small, there are eight within 400 or 500 yards of the house. So I thought, it's a simple matter. I'll just, you know, drop in here and drop in there, which I did. And either there would be the pipe music or there would be a semblance of an American sports bar. Or in one case, a place that turned into a singles bar on Saturday night. And you'd walk by on a summer evening, which in Dublin is never very warm, and you would find young women dressed in these as though they were in a beach town, sort of shivering outside. And I thought, I don't want to see Malibu here. You know, this is not right.
and indeed, this sort of Americanization of the Irish pub is something that you write about a great deal in this book.
Well, there's a whole cross-fertilization, you know, even as Americans and Italians and Germans and so on embrace this sort of fairy tale version of an Irish pub. The Irish are very attuned to America, and many of them have visited, particularly East Coast cities, New York, Chicago, Boston, and they're tuned into American culture. Now, American politics has disappointed them over the past few years, but they're able to separate the two. So you get an overlap where, curiously, you can find pubs. You could find a match, let's say, for a certain Dublin pub with one on the east side of Manhattan. They'd be so close in the way they look.
Now, we're talking with Bill Barish about his new book, A Pint of Plain Tradition, Change, and the Fate of the Irish Pub. What is it that makes a good pub? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And let's see if we can start with Karen. Karen with us from Tuckerton in New Jersey.
Hello.
Hi, Karen. What makes a good pub?
Well, we have a local pub in our town called Doyle's, and the owner actually will come and sit down and talk with you. He actually put on his special menu, he takes his friends' names. He made, my son's name is Dominic, so he has Dom Super Gyro on the menu. And it's just a welcoming atmosphere. We know all the servers. We go every Friday night to this pub, and we love it. We could go anywhere else we want, but we wouldn't because we know we can go there.
A good owner, as you would put it, Bill Barish, a good publican.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's a key. You know, so many of the pubs now in Ireland, are, at least in the cities, are owned by partnerships or corporate entities, and they
the
can't.
Owner, just the one owner.
That's what you got to have. You got to live right above the pub. You know, you got to be hands on all the time. There's one fellow in the book who. A fellow named Eugene Kavanagh, who runs a pub called The Grave Diggers, which is next to a famous cemetery. And he's so attuned to the vibes that, you know, he'll be living upstairs. He could live anywhere. He's made quite a bit of money. But he prefers to be up from the pub, and he'll be sitting there watching TV, and a kind of rumble will begin below. And he'll know that it's time for him to come down and just sort of show his face and say, now, lads, you know, you're making a bit too much noise.
That's funny. Well, thank you. It was nice speaking with you.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, Karen.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email from Catherine in San Jose. A great pub on top of a good pint, good company, and good traditional live music ought to have a proper home-cooked food. Two unforgettable Irish pub experiences include Sunday breakfast at the Keys Pub in Galway before it was redone, fried eggs, tomatoes, toast, and black and white pudding with a pint of Guinness. Most people would head there after church and hang until mid-afternoon. Or on the southern Irish coast, a meal of fresh steamed mussels, homemade soda bread, and again a pint of Guinness. Memorable meal even 20 years later. And I was astonished to realize, as reading your book, Bill, what an important part food now plays in a pub's business.
It does, particularly in the city. In the country, it's still there. There are some country pubs you walk into, and if you say, you know, do you have any peanuts? The publican will look at you like, there's something wrong with you, you know, wanting food in a pub. But in the city, you know, one of the biggest publicans has said quite recently that most pubs are going to have to do 50% of their business in food. So that's a big change.
You also, your book, written no fault of yours, but at the time when the Celtic Tiger was growling strong, and it has since, as I think one of the reviewers of your book wrote, been stuffed and mounted, the boom is over. So what has changed? You write of a situation where pubs being bought and some even torn down because the real estate was worth more, and that because of the enormous pressures of the boom times, it was bad for the pubs. I assume that downtimes are not good for the pubs either.
Well, I think they actually are in the way that the movies are, and you know, so, you know, during the Depression, we're seeing it now in the movie grosses. They're going way up, except for Watchmen, I guess. But the you know, it's a relatively inexpensive form of entertainment. And I think also people like to be somewhere where they're going to be distracted. Now, at the same time, publicans will always tell you they're suffering, so you take it with
a grain
of salt. But you now do see signs in the city of Dublin posted saying, we guarantee we will not raise our prices for a year.
We're talking with Bill Barish about his new book, A Pint of Plain, Tradition, Change, and the Fate of the Irish Pub. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is John. John with us from Tucson.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
I've been frequenting Irish pubs only here in the U.S., so that's my experience, for about the past 25 years. And I frequent them, and I've gone to different cities and whatnot. And the best one I found was in Washington, D.C., right across from the main train station, of all places. I went to Georgetown and lived there for 4 years. And the thing that I liked the best was the band and the atmosphere of the people. And on the old wooden tables that we sit at, there's actually indentations right in front of where you sit from people banging their pints on the table. And and that was the best experience I found.
John, thanks very much. But that description that he has of you know, something flowing like a conversation—that's that's typical of a good pub, isn't it, Bill?
Well, it is. But what's interesting too is that you may find those marks that were made by the pubs were actually manufactured, because so many of these pubs, and it happened to me even in Dublin, you walk into a place and you see this decor, and it appears to have been there for a half century, and you think this is marvelous, you know. But it turns out these pubs that are being built all around the world by four or five companies recommended by Guinness, they are manufactured down to that level of precision. For instance, there's a big company in Dublin, and when you decide that you would like to, you have the money and you want to open an Irish pub, you go to them, and they say, well, here's the six prototypes. You know, there's the Country Cottage, there's the Victorian, there's the Traditional, and they will supply you with everything from the bric-a-brac to the sound system, you know, that matches the intensity of the conversation to the kind of music that's being played.
Well, I lived here in Washington for some time, and, well, there is a pub just like that right down the street, one of the Fado pubs that are owned, I think, by the
Guinness. That's the biggest chain, and it's owned in partnership by the fellow who runs the Irish Pub Company. And they are the largest customer of Guinness in the U.S.
But the pub he was talking about across from the train station, and that's been there for quite a while.
Is it? That's
a legit place. There's some others in D.C., too, that are not too bad. Here's some email. And one nice thing I enjoy about Irish or English pubs, they're often well-lit, not bright, but not dark, like so many bars in the States. A small detail, but something that struck me as nice. This is from Jason. Here in San Antonio, we have the tradition of the Ice House, where you can still get a tab that'll be services once a month. Talk is rich and dynamic, with welders sitting next to artists, sitting next to business executives. Not exactly an Irish pub, but hey, nonetheless. This from Keith in Reno, Nevada. A good pub serves breakfast and knows its locals. It's something you don't get in a corporate pub. The breakfast, though, is one of the most important aspects. It makes people see the place as more of a family or community location. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is from Bob. Bob with us from Cape Cod.
Hi. I have been going to, for a number of years, a pub in Connecticut, and it's the Griswold Inn. They have Monday nights every time they have an event on. It's basically sea shanties, pub songs, but the nice thing about it is there's a very regular standard crowd that have been there for 20 years because the entertainment's been consistent, and so they have a very regular crowd, but it also draws in folks from other areas. So you get a nice mix of a standard crowd, but it's not exclusive. But it's also not such a transient group either.
Bill Barish, what the Irish would call a blow-in.
You mean the transients?
Yes.
But they wouldn't. It's more somebody from a foreign country.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I mean, you know, no matter how long you're there, you're always going to be, I have discovered, a blow-in. I mean, it's meant sort of fondly. It's not a you know, put-down, but it's a tag that you carry.
Bob, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And let's see if we can go now to Miles. And Miles with us from San Francisco.
Yes, indeed. Good morning to you, and thank you so much for having us on the show.
Ah, well, that sounds like an Irish accent.
Yeah, very much so. Very, very much so. Yeah, yeah. I've been here in San Francisco since 1989, and we opened up our first bar here in Green Street in 1994, the 13th of October, 1994, and we've been serving people in the Bay Area and all throughout America for the last 17 years. I'm very proud to do so as well.
And from your point of view, what makes a great pub?
The staff, absolutely. The Irish staff that we have here that have been with us since the day that we opened, like Deirdre Black from Galway, Orla Nealon, Sandra Killeen, all from the west of Ireland, Seacro Shotnessy, all from the west. It's the staff. It's that 100,000 welcomes that you make people feel welcome when they walk in. The atmosphere, the decor, the traditional Irish music, reviving the old traditions that made Ireland great. People that are passionate and loyal. People that really eat, drink, and speak Irish, like we speak fluent Irish here at the bar as well. But it's just really that 100,000 welcomes, people coming in. The staff is the most prominent thing. In Ireland, you don't have it anymore because of the drink driving laws. Now you have the super pubs. It's very, very, very hard to find a true, authentic Irish pub these days. There's a lot of plastic paddy bars out there and everything like that, but a true traditional Irish bar is a person that is so passionate about it, that knows all about the literature and the background, and the Americans love to come in, and Irish Americans love to come in, who are more Irish in some ways than the Irish themselves.
And Miles, you're going to be seeing a lot of them tomorrow on what a lot of people think of as amateur night, but good St. Patrick's Day for you.
Thank you so much indeed. It'll be a great day tomorrow, and happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody out there, all the millions of Irish that live in America. We're very proud to be Irish, and thank you so much indeed. We're on 622 Green Street, San Francisco.
All right, you got to get the plug in. Bill Barish, we'll plug your book, too. It's A Pint of Plain, the Tradition, Change, and the Fate of the Irish Pub. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil.
Bill Barish lives in Dublin now. He joined us today from NPR West in Culver City, California, where I'm sure there's an Irish pub. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tomorrow, Donna Foote spent a year in the trenches with Teach for America. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Join us then. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.